is to not settle and look at the great Hakeem Olajuwon.
Good morning. The Rockets lead the best of seven against Utah. Two games to none. They crushed them again last night, 118-98. And the way I'm looking at things, the playoffs have started as well as humanly possible for the Rockets. If I were to say Saturday morning, they would have crushed the Jazz in two straight games. They would have played very well. They're crushing them offensively. The Warriors would have dropped a game in which they blew a 31-point lead. Plus, they lost a guy in DeMarcus Cousins. You're feeling pretty good about things. The Rockets made a statement. This playoff has started as well as humanly possible.
This for me so far has been exactly what I wanted to see, which is when the Rockets enter the playoffs, are they going to be in curb stomping mode? And I think they are. They're in curb stomping mode. They're taking a team that's much their inferior, and they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do. And the Jazz have been in desperation mode from the first minute of the first game, where they're trying all these different things defensively. It seems like panic to me. And the only thing I can guess is that Quinn Snyder, their coach, just knew how big the mismatch was. And I'll give him credit for saying, all right, we're going to go out and we're going to throw everything against the wall and see if it sticks. And maybe we'll have a chance. But they have not had a chance, Mike. It's been pathetic. And now the question is, can the Rockets go to Utah? Worst fans in America. Maybe the worst fans in the world. Like, I feel like if it were easy to get away with crime in America, they would definitely be like rioting and intimidating players and doing all these other kinds of things. Probably the worst fans in the world.
And a lot of racism.
Do it for the, like, it's hard to hate any individual on the Jazz squad. Do you guys hate any of the Jazz players?
Not really.
I can't bring myself to hate any of them.
Which is a terrible sign for
Rubio,
them.
Rubio's always annoyed.
He's
the
a
hell
less
out
handsome
me,
Ricky Rubio.
Rubio,
can I quote you on that?
Yes.
He's a less
Rubio,
handsome
Rubio, who's a rich man's Lonzo Ball. I've never liked Rubio. I know people loved him when he came in. He's like, oh, look at, he's got that charming accent and he plays so hard. Nah, screw you, Rubio. So I kind of dislike Rubio, but for the most part, just go and shut those fans up. That stupid Z-Dog kid on the internet, all these deplorable, awful Jazz fans, just go embarrass them. Turn them into the frauds that they are.
It's not supposed to be this easy, and yet it has been. I totally agree with the point that Seth made to begin, which is the Jazz have been reeling from essentially the first couple of minutes of these games. I mean, last night, you know, you look up and it's like 24-9, and Harden's hitting floaters and hitting threes, and P.J. Tucker's hitting basically everything from the corner, from the three-point line. And Utah's tried to make some runs, but we've been at a point where, you know, last night when it was a 15-point deficit, you felt like, boy, I'm a little bit nervous now. It's down to 15 points. That's what we're talking about
in
these games.
I couldn't even bring myself to – I was reminded my wife about all the, you know, 20-point leads that the Rockets have blown over the season, and I couldn't do it. It was all just an exercise and like, okay, can I scare myself? Can I give myself the appropriate amount of fear in this game? And there was no way. The Jazz were never coming back in that game.
Paul, you feel like this series is over.
Oh, I thought it was over before it began.
You did.
To quote Mean Girls, and not to go us mode, but you can't sit with us, Utah Jazz. You have no business being in this series. The Rockets fell to being the 4 seed because of that awful start to the year, but they closed it out so strong. They have no chance. They don't have the offensive guns to match. And I'm going to point specifically at Donovan Mitchell, who is the focal point of the Utah Jazz. He looked so unsure of himself. I remember this specific moment, and this was right before I thought the game was over, where he drives through the lane. I think he saw Clint Capella. He hesitated for a second, misses a layup, gets back out into the corner because the Jazz got the offensive rebound, shoots the corner three, clanks it as well. He looked so not him, and that you have to give credit to the Rockets' defense for that. They seem to have gotten under his skin.
Well, Eric Gordon especially. I think Eric Gordon is going to be one of the keys to this run.
What's going
to
happen next?
I'm kind of thankful for them seeing the Warriors as soon as they're going to see him, because there's no long drawn out wait for this. It's going to be all right. Eric Gordon's going to be one of the keys to whether this Rockets run is over in a couple weeks or not. And so far it's been really good. I think that you look at the last couple games and you wonder, okay, are you going to get the same 3-point production out of PJ Tucker? Are you going to be able to get some of these same things? And I think that's fair, but I also think it's fair to say you're going to get more out of Chris Paul at some point offensively. Paul was 1 for 9 from the 3-point line last night.
The one he hit was nice.
Yeah.
Well, and the one he hit was nice.
Nice little crafty. Again, when the Jazz are trying all this stuff where they're trying to force Harden or Paul to go, you know, to just allowing them to drive and not giving them to the left or the right, Paul draws a foul out on the perimeter for that. Harden drew some really, you know, like, Harden had a quintessential Harden game.
He was awesome.
You had step backs, you had drives, you had floaters, you had drawn fouls. And I don't know if this is just because I've been around it for so long now. Maybe there's an artistry to the way Harden draws fouls that I think only a Houston Rockets fan can understand. Every other team in the league hates you because of it. But, like, you can't hate how good he is at doing it. And it's like it takes a certain amount of timing and skill to actually do it. And I'm sure somebody's like gripping their steering wheel, fuming with their old school sentiments right now. But like there's this flat out is. Don't you act like other people wouldn't do it if they could. Everybody's like, oh, he's traveling on the step back three. All right. Well, he's getting away with it. It's a damn gather step, you fool. So use the gather step. Everybody's like, why aren't you doing it? You're going to sit there and complain about it all day long? This is like you're sitting like in World War I being like, well, those machine guns aren't very fair. I'm going to stick with my bayonet. Screw you, you dumbass. Get yourself a machine gun. That's what we have. We got a machine gun Harden. Are we allowed to use that nickname these days?
We could do that. How about we call him a tank in this series against the Jazz? And much like the United States, they manipulated the game when they started using tanks. James Harden manipulates the game, and I have no problem with it at all. The game was done. Over the series was over when Harden hit a three over Ricky Rubio to make it 27-9 with 5:30 to go in the first. I sat back. They had just completed a 12-0 run. This was a little bit after Donovan Mitchell pooped his pants in the lane. And I thought to myself, yep, this is done. Let's fast forward to the Golden State Warriors. And the question I have for you two, can we see that same level of James Harden for the majority of a series against Golden State? Because this is, I think, one of his best, his better playoff performances that we've seen.
Well, it's going to be harder. Well, it's going to be a lot harder against that defense.
And I think that Harden falls into that classic mode in the playoffs where it's like it is with Steph Curry. You can have the biggest influence on the game without having the most impressive box score because everybody is focused on limiting and stopping you. Then it becomes, all right, well, everything we just talked about, Eric Gordon, P.J. Tucker, all these guys, Clint Capela and the way he was playing last night. Clint Capela
was great.
Physical as hell.
Outstanding.
Yep. He intimidated guys.
He had one stretch in the second quarter there where it seemed like 4 or 5 possessions in a row he had a block.
Yep.
It was just, was a great performance out of Clint Capela.
Well, as far as Harden goes, Mike Sevenpaw on a Thursday, we're discussing the Rockets crushing the Jazz last night in Game 2, 118-98. James Harden in the second round against the Golden State Warriors. How do you judge him? Like, how, other than winning, which is the obvious, how do you judge him? Because last night he had 32 points. Last year in Game 6 and Game 7 against the Warriors, he also had 32 points and people were disappointed. Mm-hmm. So how do you judge James Harden against the Warriors except for winning the games?
It's a feel thing. You know, you can't always look at the box score, but when you see Harden like he was last night, it just feels different. Beautiful passes like the alley-oop he had to Nene. You see him penetrating. You see him hitting shots that make me cringe when he takes them. But if he makes them, I mean, I can't say a damn thing with his 5 gather steps and his step back threes.
Well, Game 6 and Game 7 last year, all right, we can be disappointed in Harden. We're disappointed in Harden for not single-handedly beating the greatest team ever assembled. And that's where I just don't get it sometimes. Like, I understand a lot of the criticism of Harden, but it was James Harden and some good players on his team, but it was James Harden versus the greatest team ever assembled. And somehow he, as the lone scary weapon on that team, of which the Warriors can focus all their attention, somehow he's supposed to score 55 points and win those games.
Well, he won the MVP. I mean, that's the unfair expectation that's put on the guy.
But it's not. But no MVP could go up against that squad by himself and defeat them.
LeBron. To an extent, he had Kyrie Irving.
Not with Durant.
I don't think that's a fair one because he did have Kyrie, and Kyrie was great in the NBA Finals 3 years ago. Like, I mean, he was just sensational.
It wasn't one man and some good players versus the Durant Warriors. It's these Durant Warriors.
There was a feeling, I guess, last year that maybe Harden wore down, but ultimately, I agree with Paul, it's a feel thing. as far as Harden against Golden State. And we're not looking past this series. I think Paul is.
I am. I was looking past it before it began, guys.
Mike, we told you yesterday we're looking past this series.
Yeah, you did.
Why do you keep summarizing things that aren't true about us?
We're going to watch.
Like, look, Paul and Seth are both Holocaust deniers, but let's move on. Whoa.
Moving
forward.
Whoa.
Why, no? You're saying things that are untrue.
Mike, Seth, and Paul on a Thursday. I was thinking of a joke to work in there, and I just couldn't think of one quickly enough.
Usually one Holocaust denier joke is probably the good. You've reached your quota. Move
but
on.
Even with
for the week, for the month. Yeah.
But here's the most important thing. What's the deal with Jadeveon Clowney? Just kidding. The Texans' schedule has been released, and I want to start with you guys with the first game they play, which is against the New Orleans Saints, Monday Night Football on the road. My initial reaction was hatred. Hatred of having to play this game. Now, I will tell you what I don't like. I do not like opening up on Monday nights. I have never really been a huge fan of Monday Night Football because I'm of the era where people keep telling me Monday night's like the biggest game of the year. And for a 33-year-old, it never was. The games were on too late when I was a kid. Regardless, I don't love opening up on Monday night, but I'm actually okay with the Saints part. For some reason, I actually feel okay with opening up with the Saints as a tough test before you come back home and face Jacksonville. I'm okay with the Saints part of it.
I guess my first question would be why? Because, like, it's not the Saints, Mike. It's the Saints
in the Superdome
in New Orleans.
Right? I know.
With a defense for the Texans that usually starts off the season looking a little discombobulated and confused. Usually there'll be, like, some egregious mental errors and blown coverages for the first 3 weeks. And then you're wondering, like, what the hell's going on? And then all of a sudden they steady the ship and everything moves on. So this is that discombobulated offense plus the Texans' offensive line, which I don't know if you've been paying attention or not, hasn't gotten all that much respect over the last few years in the Superdome. Remember how many? Hey, remember who had so many false starts last year? The Houston Texans' offensive line.
That's
remember
right.
Like two of their offensive linemen were in the top 10 for penalties.
Seth, they
for
got
false
it.
Starts.
They got
that's
it under
in
control.
The Superdome. No, this is bad. This is it's really really
whistle
bad.
Whistle guy's
going to
kill them.
Yeah, it's
whistle monster.
Okay, so you're Seth, you're very down on this week one game against New Orleans.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm going to tell you my first impression of the schedule last night was we all knew that it was probably going to be a tough schedule
and
just
it is?
Based on the opponents. And even without like talking about the specific timing of the games, when you see all those actual opponents laid out in a row, it's probably like what it feels like where maybe you're sitting on death row and you've gotten philosophical about things. And you're like, all right, look, life is short. You know, I've atoned for my sins. This is going to be all right. And then all of a sudden you're walking the Green Mile and you see the chair in front of you. It's like I saw the chair in front of me last night. This is not going to be a pleasant experience unless they get some things straight. They need to get several people very straight, very fast. And then it'll be impressive if they do well on this schedule. But last year's Texans team on this year's schedule would have gone 6-10. So that's what we have right now. You need to be better than last year's team. And it starts with that Monday night game in New Orleans. If they beat the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans,
it's a big deal.
I will be the most jubilant guy you've seen here at 6 a.m. the next morning. I'll be walking on air. I will float in here saying that
not
the
possible.
Texans are bound for the Super Bowl. But it's a huge test right from the get-go.